Phil Hendry.
Powerful interests who have been dominating the agenda in Washington.
And I do want to apologize.
That means that the dollar in you is a hoax. It's a,
he's initially charged with the defamation.
You must drown government like a baby.
World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Taking your ass to the very edge of reality since 1990. Where truth is our bitch, and a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, man, we'll take you wherever we need to take you to get you to wherever you need to be. In other words, what we're here for primarily is to entertain and to, I don't know, enlighten and all of that stuff. But be that as it may, we have Dr. Ron Tarner with us. Let me just let Dr. Tarner do the talking here this hour. And we're going to discuss the statement made last week that was a little bit under the radar, but I think people have had time to digest it now, by Professor Stephen Hawking. And Professor Hawking, an eminent man, and a man who comes up quite a bit in conversations we have with Ron Tarner. Dr. Hawking is a British physicist, a theoretical physicist, an eminent man, as you probably know. He suffers from ALS, what some people call Lou Gehrig's disease. The actual pronunciation of this disease is amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, which paralyzes the body. He also has neuromuscular dystrophy. So this man is a terrible physical maladies have afflicted him. But nonetheless, he's written books. Recently, as 1998, he wrote a book called A Brief History of Time. And since then, he has written a great many books. The Grand Design is due to go on sale next week. He has been the host of a television show on the universe and so on and so forth. He made a statement last week in which he said God did not create the universe, and the Big Bang was an inevitable consequence of the laws of physics. God did not create the universe. The Big Bang was the inevitable consequence of the laws of physics. In The Grand Design, co-authored with U.S. physicist Leonard Maldonado, Hawking says a new series of theories made a creator of the universe redundant, according to the Times newspaper, which published extracts on Thursday. Because there is a law such as gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. Spontaneous creation is the reason there is something rather than nothing. It is why the universe exists. It is why we exist, wrote Stephen Hawking. So there's a lot there that I suppose, you know, we might, all of us might feel a little bit reluctant to challenge a man as eminent as Dr. Stephen Hawking on something like that. But Dr. Ron Tarner, who is an astronomer and is himself a physicist from Mountain Meadow Observatory in Cloverdale, Colorado, joins us. And here again is Dr. Stephen Hawking saying something controversial, Ron. And what do you think the world thinks today? I mean, you know, you're very right when you say that people admire Dr. Hawking. They've consumed his books. They've watched the television shows that he has been the host of. He's been to physics and to the laws of science like what Carl Sagan was to astronomy, don't you think?
I don't know. I think that's giving Stephen Hawking a little more credit than Carl Sagan was a masterful teacher. Carl Sagan, I knew Carl Sagan, and he was a great teacher, a great writer, a great communicator. Stephen Hawking is a man of controversy. He courts controversy, I think, the way some men chase women. Some people like to go to the horse races. Stephen Hawking, I think, has been able to parlay what has been a very, very unfortunate life in terms of his physical condition, as you mentioned, Bill, but he's been able to parlay that into a certain sympathy, admiration, which I, at times, I understand, and I do not deny the brilliance of the man, but what I do deny is that he's the only brilliant man. Now,
I have to interrupt to say, you've been on record on this show as saying that Stephen Hawking, you don't like him.
I don't. That's a very strong to say that. It's not that I don't like him. I don't like how he has turned into a celebrity by using his physical condition married to these brilliant ideas of extraterrestrial aliens and there is no God. So he uses the fact that he's in this wheelchair, and then he says something like there's no God, and then he lets the press report on the fact that he's been dating two or three different women in the same week, and he becomes a larger-than-life character that I find frustrating, because the rest of us sit here waiting for the phone to ring.
All right. So, you know, Stephen Hawking has a lot of celebrity. He has a lot of people that recognize his brilliance. And you and other scientists like you don't get that kind of recognition because you're not in a wheelchair. And
no, it's not because I'm not in a wheelchair. It's because that Hawking has somehow taken the fact that he's got Lou Gehrig's disease, and he has turned that into, because I have Lou Gehrig's disease, I'm Albert Einstein. I don't know how he did it. I don't know when it started. I don't know when we began to believe that he was Albert Einstein just because he went out and spent a pretty significant amount of money on that wheelchair and has had several girlfriends and has been seen in certain nightclubs. And
well, I mean, the man's going to have you know, there's going to be groupies. But what has this got to do, you know, with what he said?
What do you mean the man's going to have groupies? Here's a guy, he's run through more girlfriends, but I understand that's neither here nor there.
What has that got to do with what he said about God did not create the universe?
All right, here is, finally, people are going to understand what I've been saying about Stephen Hawking. This man, his ego is so enormous that he feels he can say that God basically doesn't exist. And Stephen Hawking is saying, I dare you to hate me. You can't hate me, because to hate Stephen Hawking is to hate. If I could use a parable, Phil, or perhaps a comparison in culture, to hate Stephen Hawking is to hate Tiny Tim. To hate Stephen Hawking is to hate the you know, the little crippled. You know what I mean, right?
Well, I mean, are you saying there's a sympathy vote for Stephen Hawking that would even deny someone their feelings, their opinions?
I think yes. I think that people are so in love with this guy that even a devout fundamentalist Christian, if Stephen Hawking said God didn't invent the universe, Billy Graham would keep his mouth shut. Boy, I'll tell you, that's too much power for one man to have. And I find it to be unsettling. I find it to be troubling. I find it to be dishonest.
Do you disagree with him? Let's get right down to that. When Stephen Hawking says that God did not create the universe, that the universe was the inevitable consequence of gravity, do you disagree? Now, hold on before you answer the question here, Dr. Turner. I just want to ask you, do you disagree with the idea that I'm trying to read a note here. I don't know what it is he's trying to tell me here. I guess nothing.
What are you saying?
Do you disagree with him?
Do I disagree with Stephen Hawking?
Yeah.
No, I don't disagree with Stephen Hawking because I said the exact same thing 8 months ago. I wrote the exact same thing in a paper that I did for North American Physics, and that same thing, I wrote the same thing. So I said the exact same thing, and all that did was get me criticism, and it got me uninvited to two lectures, a lecture series I was going to do at the University of Chicago. But Stephen Hawking says it. And
so you also agree that God didn't create the universe?
Yes, but it doesn't matter what I think, because I've been uninvited to two lecture series. Stephen Hawking says it, and he may have two more girlfriends by the end of this week. He may have his own television show by the end of this week. There might be something else that this guy will be offered in order for us to further, you know. I'm telling you.
So it's frustrating for you, huh? All right.
Yeah, it is. It's frustrating for me because Hawking has said that God doesn't exist. Everyone is kissing his blank, blank, And when I said the same thing 8 months ago, I'm almost out of a job. How does that happen? Why? Because he's in a wheelchair?
Well, again, I mean, his reputation precedes itself. He is a great thinker.
All right, he's a great thinker, but I said it before he did. So why are people focusing on him and not what I said?
I guess people are going to pay more attention to what Stephen Hawking...
There you go, right there. You said it. Don't say any more. You said it. People are going to pay more attention to what Stephen Hawking says than what Ron Carter says. Why is that?
Because people know him better.
Yeah. Why do they know him better? Because he's in a wheelchair.
Well, I don't think...
No, that's exactly it. Because he's in a wheelchair. Because he went out and bought a state-of-the-art wheelchair that he shows off, that he thinks... You've got to see him at some of these seminars.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Stephen Hawking said that God did not create the universe. Gravity did. And people... you know, are going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Ron Turner said the exact same thing 8 months ago, and he is almost out of his job at the observatory, and he's been uninvited to a variety of seminars. And the hypocrisy, he thinks, is the result of people are more willing to believe Stephen Hawking because he's in a wheelchair and Ron Turner isn't. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Talking with Dr. Ron Turner here tonight, and again, we're talking about Dr. Stephen Hawking, who has been in the news for over a week in making a statement last week. Actually, it was a statement released, or it was a quote released from a book that he has co-authored, a book that is entitled The Grand Design, in which he says, God did not create the universe. And Stephen Hawking is a theoretical physicist. Don't you think it's pretty de rigueur, Dr. Turner, for a scientist to say, well, you know, God doesn't exist?
Oh, it may well be, Phil, but Stephen Hawking is the MC and the host of, he has hosted television shows. Stephen Hawking has MC'd different charity events. Stephen Hawking is a popular figure on the lecture circuit. Stephen Hawking is a popular figure writers and the books that people like to read. Here is a man who is a theoretical physicist whose name is known even by the common man. And Stephen Hawking now has grown so big, he has gotten so huge, that he can say there's no God and nobody dare challenge him. Well, I am challenging him. And I have been challenging him for a number of years because I'm not afraid of him. I've been dogging Stephen Hawking for the last 20 years because I know what he is. I know how slippery he is. I know how he has...
You think that he's a bad man?
I don't think he's a bad man. I don't think Stephen Hawking's a bad man. He's an atheist. He's an atheist.
And but you're an atheist, too.
It doesn't matter. I'm an atheist, but... I'm not exactly out here advertising that I'm an atheist. I'll tell you why. I may be an atheist, but Stephen Hawking being an atheist is a bad thing because that is something that young people will be influenced by. And I think I need to let people know that he's an atheist because parents will then say, I don't want you listening to this man in an electric wheelchair. Because I think it's destructive for you to listen to Stephen Hawking. He's an atheist.
But you're an atheist. Well, the point that I'm making here is you're also an atheist. You also agree that God did not create the universe.
What I asked you before we went on the air, what I asked your producer, it doesn't make any difference if I would rather you not say that I'm an atheist. Here, I'll tell you why. I don't think being an atheist is a good thing. I hate atheists.
I'm sorry, but...
You're going back...
No. Hold on for a minute. You can't say you're an atheist and then say that you hate atheists.
When I found out what Stephen Hawking said. I need people to know that I hate that.
And so you're going to hate Stephen Hawking said because you want to just bring him down?
No.
Yeah, that's exactly what. You want to, if he's an atheist, then you hate atheists. Are you still an atheist?
You're really confusing things.
No, I'm not. You said you're an atheist, but now that Stephen Hawking's an atheist...
Stephen Hawking said God did not create the universe. Stephen Hawking, you're making this about me. This is not about me.
Well, all right, hold on. 877-876-PHIL is our number in the Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-PHIL. I got Ron Turner here, and we're going to get to some of your phone calls in a minute, but I want to clear this up. You know, it's about Stephen Hawking. I understand that. But you said you're an atheist.
I am an atheist.
You believe that God did not create the universe.
That is right.
But you feel now that Stephen Hawking has said that that's bad.
This is an opportunity for people to see how slippery this guy is. Yes, I'm an atheist. Do I agree with him? I agree with him, but I think it's bad. I want people, and especially young people and parents, to know that what he said is bad. That Stephen Hawking, who hosts television show, how clear do I have to be, Phil? Television. You know,
I know what that is, Ron, and you don't have to make a... I understand that television is an extremely influential medium, and that he is on TV. He's written a lot of books. Okay, and the fact that he's in his wheelchair, you think, makes him a very sympathetic figure. I get that. But the fact remains that you agree with him, but you're ready to tear him down and your own belief system down just so people will not like Stephen Hawking.
And the reason why I don't want people to like Stephen Hawking is because he's a phony baloney. He's a phony baloney. The things that he says, like God didn't create the universe, have gotten lesser men fired from their jobs. The books that he writes, the big deal that he thinks he is with his wheelchair and his girlfriends, all of this amounts to, in my opinion, a man who has gotten far, far too big for what he's able to do. First of all, he can't really do anything other than sit and stare. But he makes these comments that somehow get turned into books, that somehow get turned into songs, that somehow suddenly become symphony orchestras. And to hear it, you hear the guy talk, it sounds like an electronic band.
And I know, but none of this stuff has anything to do. You have a personal problem with him. And your personal problem with Stephen Hawking isn't because he's an atheist, because you're also an atheist. Your personal problem with Stephen Hawking isn't because he's a theoretical physicist, because you yourself engage in it. You don't really disagree with anything that he has to say, and yet you want to publicly tear the man down. And my question for you, as it has always been, Dr. Turner, is why?
Because no one who's in his condition should have the social life that he has. I'm not saying he shouldn't be happy.
Why not?
Why? How is it that he has...
Is it about the number of girlfriends he's got?
Mr. Henry?
Is it about the number of girlfriends that he has?
There's a lot of that, yes. It's the fact that I work very hard, and so do a lot of other scientists. Stephen Hawking has a Twitter account, and he talks about watching Rosie O'Donnell, and he's making these jokes about hip-hop music, and he's in a hoverround, and he's got girlfriends. Where is the justice in that? When I'm sitting here at night, and I can't make the words come out of my mouth the way I want them to.
What are you trying to say here, man? You're telling me that this man, this poor, unfortunate man, has had a difficult life, and yet he's been able to make a life for himself. He's got a social life. He's got a Twitter account. You know, so he follows hip-hop music, so he watches Rosie O'Donnell. And these are all things that you don't like because he's got more girlfriends than you do.
You've seen me, right?
Yes.
Do I look like I shouldn't have girlfriends?
No. You're a normal guy.
Well, if I'm a normal-looking guy, then why is it Hawking? If you saw that last woman he was with, that blonde... That thing, that was built like something else, you know. I guess I'm not making myself as clear as I could, but I wish that you would see past my nervousness.
Hold on for a minute, Ron.
What's that?
Hold on for just a minute. 877-876-PHIL. Ron Turner on Dr. Stephen Hawking having more girlfriends than him. We'll be back in the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back, 877-876-PHIL. Dr. Stephen Hawking last week, in a book that he has written, the statement was released from that book as part of, I'm sure, the press for the book. God did not create the universe. The universe was created by gravity. With me is Dr. Ron Turner, who is an astronomer at the Mountain Meadow Observatory. All right, when we were last talking, you were talking about notoriety, and we're going to go to some phone calls here in a moment, 877-876-PHIL. But what were you saying about Mel Gibson?
Well, I was saying, Phil, that Mel, you were going on about how I'm an atheist, and so if I agree with Stephen Hawking that I'm a hypocrite for criticizing, I'm simply asking you this.
I didn't call you a hypocrite. You know,
well, I'm asking you this. Mel Gibson turns on a woman, and people hate him, and Tiger Woods cheats on his wife, and people hate him. Stephen Hawking says there's no God, and we are still genuflecting at the base of his wheelchair, and we think he's brilliant. Now, why is that? Why is that? There's no answer, is there?
I think it's because with a Stephen Hawking, we see his contribution as being more significant than playing golf or being an actor.
What? What are you talking about?
I'm saying that with a Stephen Hawking, the world may be more forgiving of him, given the fact that he's a scientist, which we see as a far more valuable contribution to man's journey on this planet than acting or playing golf. Okay?
Yeah, but he can't move without moving a lever with his chin.
Well, that doesn't necessarily mean he's not worth it as a human being. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call here. Ken in Las Vegas, Nevada. Ken, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Dr. Ron Turner. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Phil. I'm glad to be on the radio with you. I just don't get this guy, Professor Ron. He seems to think that being in a wheelchair is...
He
thinks Stephen Hawking's the wheelchair is...
Let's ask you what you know about Stephen Hawking, which I think is probably nothing, right?
Well, I mean, Stephen Hawking's is the...
That's not even his name. It's Hawking, not Hawking's. That's what I mean, Phil.
Oh, yeah, Stephen Hawking. Okay, Stephen Hawking, he's the gentleman, okay, and I use that word gentleman, who came up with the theory of the black hole. Okay, I mean, this is a major contribution.
No, he didn't.
Was it Professor Ron?
Well,
yes, he did.
He wasn't the only one.
All right, well, he was one of them.
Well, what's the word? Well,
my point is simply that you seem to be jealous of Stephen Hawking as opposed to, you know,
no,
just being a compatriot.
No. I want to ask you why he gets to say there's no God and nobody says anything, but Mel Gibson gets to rip into some Russian, he gets to throw a punch at a baby.
Well, why does he get to say it? Is that the question? Yeah, why does he get to say it?
Why is Stephen Hawking an atheist and everyone's still kissing his, excuse me for saying this, paralyzed rear end?
Oh boy!
Yeah, it's a straight. I just don't understand.
No, I'm asking you.
All right, you want to ask a question?
Yeah.
Okay. He gets to say it because he's an American who can say his opinion.
No, he's not.
Just like you get to say your opinion.
He's British.
The atheist who doesn't like atheists. I mean, it's like I think I'm in the Twilight Zone when
I listen to a professor. What I'm talking about is this guy says there's no God, which you know as well as I do. Americans believe in God, but they let him have a pass because he's moving himself around the room by pushing a stick with his chin.
That's ridiculous.
That's why,
that's ridiculous.
Huh?
And not every American believes in God. You know, you had deists, you know, founders of the Constitution. Some of them were deists and things like that. I mean, I don't get your
We've got a church in Florida getting ready to burn Korans, and there are worldwide protests. Hawking says God doesn't exist, and we, you know, we're gutless. I'll tell you this much. I'm glad that I'm speaking up.
All right, look at Ken, thank you very much for making an effort anyway. 877-876-PHIL.
What does that mean, making an effort?
Because I think what the man is trying to determine here is, are you jealous? You know.
No, I'm not jealous. I'm trying to find out. I'm not trying to find out anything. I'm telling people that if people are gutless, I'll go ahead and I will lead the charge against Stephen Hawking, and I will say the things that need to be said. I'll say that he is an atheist. I'll say that he is polluting the very minds of our young people as he moves himself around the room, pushing a stick with his chin.
You know, you cannot go a few minutes without knocking this guy and the ailment that this poor man suffers. What is it with you?
What are you talking about?
Everything with pushing a stick with his chin, the hover-around, the big money hover-around deal that you were talking about, you know, last week. You know, you're saying genuflecting at his little electric wheelchair every time you open your mouth about this guy.
Because I don't understand how it is that people don't see they're kissing a crippled ass.
All right, I got to hang up, you know.
Yeah, see, that's the hypocrisy.
No, when you said that.
You hang up on him?
Yes, I did. Kissing a crippled ass.
What did he say?
I'm not going to say it any louder than he said it. All right. Thank you very much to Dr. Ron Tarner, and certainly we will look forward to, you know, whatever you have to say on the subject, Dr. Tarner. You're an atheist, too. You agree with Hawking. You just don't like kissing a you-know-what's ass. 877-876-PHIL. Do you live in the most stressful city in the country? I think I do, or close to it. We'll find out what those are when we come back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry.
Well, I don't know that anything else is right on this list, so don't be telling me something that... Anyway, welcome back here. We've got a list of the most stressful cities in America, and the reason why I was saying what I was saying there is because next to each city, I think we have the right call letters of our affiliate, but I'm not sure, so therefore I will refrain from mentioning the call letters here. Because it looks to me like somebody gave a list to me that belongs to, I don't know, Laura Ingraham or something?
Yeah, on account of she's on KRLA. And we're
all right, you don't have to blather it. Anyway, the top 10 most stressful cities in America, especially tonight. No, I'm kidding. Well, Detroit is number one. Detroit, Michigan, the most stressful city in America. Now, we're going to tell you why Detroit, L.A., and Cleveland are 1, 2, and 3. Cleveland, number 3. L.A., number 2. L.A., number 2 in a lot of things, as a matter of fact. L.A. is the new second city. Chicago's third place in just about everything except for this. They're 8th. Detroit has a lot of things going against it, says Portfolio.com editor James Moss. So this is something from Portfolio.com. So again, keep in mind the source, Portfolio.com. Who are they? I got no idea. It's a national business and news website for small business executives looking at unemployment rates, personal finance data, environment, health, and living standards, and crime rates to compile the ranking of 50 cities. But I don't think that that's what they do. I think this is just a poll that they put together. Detroit has a lot of things going against it. It topped nearly all of our standards for our stress test, although it was rarely number one, said Portfolio.com editor James Moss. Riverside in California and St. Louis in Mizzou rounded out the top 5 stressful cities. Riverside, man, out there in the Inland Empire.
Weren't you just there?
I was in Palm Springs, but I passed through Riverside.
Well, was it stressful?
Yeah. Yes, it was very stressful driving through Riverside, but once I got through it, then I got to Palm Springs. It'd be funny if Palm Springs was like number one.
And then the number sixth most stressful city, guess what? New York. Number seven, the most stressful city is New Orleans. Number eight, Chicago. Number nine, Birmingham, Alabama. And number 10, Miami, Fort Lauderdale. How is it that a city the size of a Birmingham and a city the size of a Riverside, and when I say the size of, I know that Riverside and San Bernardino, that's kind of a large growth area, and Birmingham may be the same, but you rarely see cities of such disparate sizes lumped in with other cities, lumped together, I should say, unless it's something negative, you know?
Yeah, I would say, like, where's the number one, like, who has all the handguns, you know? Be like, number one, Akron, Ohio, number two, New York. You know,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Who has the most? Where are the most handgun deaths? Well, number one, Bozeman, Montana. Number two, Dallas, Texas. Detroit has been plagued with high unemployment, a really distressed housing market, and is burdened with high crime. It doesn't really seem like it has much hope, said Moss. Boy, that's rough. That's rough. He added that I remember when Detroit was, well, it was Motor City. When I was growing up, Detroit was where the cars were made. It was where Berry Gordy had Motown Records, when you had the Supremes and you had the Four Tops. All kinds of great music was coming out of Detroit. You had the Detroit Tigers. You had Mickey Lolich and Denny McClain, and you had the whole thing, man. It was beautiful, you know.
Yeah, and then they had all that smoke coming up from just behind the center field fence.
Right, all the smoke coming up from behind the center. What are you talking about, man?
I'm talking about the riots.
I'm talking about before that. All the smoke coming up behind the center field fence.
What's that?
They had a riot in Detroit, man. They had riots all over this country. It was a bloody mess. He added that the list was done using statistical data analysis rather than interviews with local residents about their levels of stress. We didn't interview residents. People will always have some civic pride that could counter statistical figures. God forbid we should have anybody say anything good about these cities. No, we just wanted all the negative stuff, he said. New York City captured the number six spot, followed by Nolens, Chicago, Birmingham, and Miami, Fort Lauderdale. At the other end of the scale, Salt Lake City was ranked as the least stressful city, thanks to its low crime rate, high health standing, and unemployment. Least stressful if you don't drink. If you drink, it is one of the most stressful cities in the history of... No, I'm kidding. No, it isn't.
You drank there, though, didn't you?
Yeah, I drank there.
What's that? Are you allowed to drink there?
Of course you're allowed to drink there.
You're kidding me.
No, you can drink in Salt Lake City.
Well, how come they can do that?
What do you mean, how come they can do? You can drink in Salt Lake City. The thing that you can't do in Salt Lake City is you can't order a beer and a shot. You know what I'm saying about, you know what I mean?
Uh-uh.
In other words, in California, let's say, most cities, you say like a beer and a shot. You want to get a beer and you want to get a, you know, whatever.
Like a Bushmills or something.
All right, a Bushmills. In Salt Lake City, they won't let you do that. However, in Salt Lake City, they have marvelous waiters and waitresses who recognize the futility of this kind of law. So they always counsel people that are in from out of town, and they'll say, okay, what would you like? Well, I think I'd like a beer and a shot. All right, here's what you do. Order the beer, and then tell me that 2 seconds later you'd like the shot. So you can't order it in the same...
Oh, you can't get the same, like in the same order?
Like the same order, yeah. Like, if in one order, a beer. Oh, would you like anything else, sir? Oh, yeah, I'd like a shot.
Well, what do you mean? I mean, how do you...
Well, you just... They know what you mean.
Yeah, so you go like, I want to have a beer, and then like 2 seconds later, I want to have a shot.
Yeah, so as long as it doesn't sound like it's in the same order.
Yeah, but you're going to come by with a beer and have a shot, and then doesn't the police see it?
I don't know, man, but I would love to meet the cop that's going to go cruising through a... Hey, wait a minute, there's a beer and a shot on the table. I don't know, but that's what we did, and I don't know why we're even talking about this.
You're talking about how stressful it was in Salt Lake City on account of the drinking.
You know, I'm just being an idiot. Virginia Beach in Virginia and Minneapolis-St. Paul also scored high for their low stress living. Moss said he hoped the list would be helpful to both employees, employers, and those without jobs. So in other words, if you're a business and you're struggling and you have as your headquarters Detroit, good luck attracting young talent, because this list just came out saying that Detroit sucks. Hey, have you thought about this one, Portfolio.com, that publishing a list like this doesn't exactly engender interest in developing business in Detroit or Los Angeles or Cleveland or anything like that? I don't know. I believe that there are a couple of different people who could look at this. says Mr. Moss. For a small business person or entrepreneur, for example, or for most people that want to start a business, the common belief is that less stress leads to happier employers and happier customers and hopefully a bigger payout. Employees looking for a job would also go to a place where they would be less stressed. No kidding. Other less stressful cities, Raleigh in North Carolina, Austin in Tejas, Denver, San Antone, and Kansas City. Those are all less stressful towns. Kansas City, stressful if you're a steer. All right.
What do you talk about?
Kidding around. So that was the list there, and that's. But again, I don't believe that it does much good for a poll like this. If I want to bring business into Detroit, if I'm trying desperately to get business back into the city of Detroit, and I don't know what the hell they're going to do, I honestly don't. I mean, look, if we ever learn how to make an automobile again, like real human beings. But beyond that, I don't know. Perhaps Detroit. There was a time in the 70s we talked about the Rust Belt. Cleveland, Akron, Ohio, Pittsburgh. This was the Rust Belt. Well, what happened? Well, Pittsburgh reinvented itself as a high-tech city. Akron, Ohio stopped making rubber tires, but now Akron has the Polymer Institute where they are. They have Akron University and the Polymer Institute where they're involved in the development of alternative synthetic materials to use in manufacturing. And Cleveland set about cleaning up Lake Erie, a lake that literally caught on fire. It was so polluted.
Oh, man, you're kidding.
What, how did that happen?
I don't know, but Lake Erie just one day spontaneously caught on fire.
Well, I mean, like, how did that happen? What did they do?
I don't know. There was just so much pollutant in that lake. And you'd have to look this up, man, but there was so much pollutant in Lake Erie that it caught on fire. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you. It caught on fire, and it was just filthy. And Cleveland was just, it was like, it was over, man. I mean, that freaking town was over. And somehow Cleveland fought its way back. They cleaned up that lake. As a matter of fact, Lake Erie at one point, many, many decades ago, Lake Erie was a place where you could go out and you could fish on Lake Erie and catch, have a good day fishing. And then it got so freaking polluted that it caught on fire, and now they've brought it back to the point where it's now a great sportsman destination.
People go fishing there.
Yeah, people can fish there. And they've got a new marina in Cleveland. So I don't know. I'd have to look into it. I almost went to work in Akron, Ohio many, many years ago. And then I realized that it wasn't Cleveland, and so I said, lucky me. No, I didn't say that, but I didn't take the job.
Where were you?
Ventura. That would have been a lateral move. All right. In other news, U.S. church to go ahead with September 11th Quran burning. Now, this is an idea that some guy in Gainesville, Florida, a Christian minister in Gainesville, Florida, Pastor Terry Jones, he came up with this brainstorm on September the 11th. This guy wants to burn copies of the Quran to protest the September 11th terrorist attacks despite warnings from the White House and top U.S. general in Afghanistan that he would endanger American troops overseas. God, man, I mean, don't you think that would be enough? You know, if you wouldn't mind. No, I'm sorry, but I have to go forward with this. You're going to get people killed. No, I don't even believe you're telling me the truth. Yeah, that's right. You're right. I forgot about the government conspiracy thing. Pastor Terry Jones of the Dove World Outreach Center, which has about 50 members, that's what it says here, 50 members, said he understands the government's concerns but doesn't give a crap because he's an egotistical, megalomaniacal jackass, and he's going to burn on Saturday the Qurans marking the 9th anniversary of the attacks. Being a Christian minister doesn't necessarily mean you're a Christian, said Terry. Most often it means you're a frustrated actor. Well, that's me. I should have been on stage in New York. And since they didn't see my genius and my talent and my agent told me that he didn't want to handle me anymore, I've decided to get the world's attention on me this way by getting men killed burning Qurans. I'm just joking. He didn't say that.
I knew he didn't say that, man. I didn't see none of that in that article.
I just thought I'd make that up. He left the door open to change his mind. What are you looking at?
What are we talking about? Was that in there?
No, it wasn't in there. I'm joking.
He was joking.
Oh, because I'm listening. I'm going, oh, wow, that guy's really an idiot.
I'm joking, but he didn't say it. But we do have some audio here that I'd like to give to you as a special going home present here, folks. Here is Pastor Terry Jones explaining the point of his demonstration. And he was explaining this on MSNBC today, so that must have been fun.
Well, we have declared September the 11th International Burn a Quran Day. We want to send a very clear message. We want to remember those who were murdered and killed at 9/11. And we also want to send a very clear message to radical Islam. We see that all over the world. We see that all over Europe. We want to send a very clear message to them, to Muslims, that if they are in America, they are free here to worship, but they must honor and respect our Constitution. We want to send a very clear message that we do not want Sharia law and Sharia courts. That is what our International Burn a Quran Day is about.
No, it's actually what it's about is about Terry Jones and getting people for his Dove Bar World Outreach thing. Coming back next hour on a world-famous Phil Hendry show with Morrissey calling the Chinese a subspecies.
All right.
Very interesting. Phil Hendry show.
Phil Hendry.